Hello, this is Ian Mays. I'm with the KNYO Radio Project and Common Ground Relief Media here in New Orleans. And I'm interviewing Mr. William Walker with the Youth Advocacy Project program. Okay, so, could you tell us a bit about this project or program?
The Youth Advocate Program has been serving kids across America, at least 13 states now for 31 years. Our mission is basically to help provide cost-effective ways to provide alternatives to compulsory placement in institutions, be it penal, mental, or any other forced institutionalization. We are new in New Orleans. Our program in New Orleans is called a Detention Alternative Program. We call the program ODAP, for Orleans Detention Alternative Program, with the emphasis being providing an alternative to incarceration. When a youngster or a juvenile offender commit an offense, our goal is to have that kid placed under strict supervision in the community, as opposed to sitting in a detention hall or detention room somewhere. We have to believe that that detention tends to worsen the kids. And so we feel a kid could better change and learn the harm of his ways and how to change that by learning in his own community, in his natural environment, even if it means being in an environment where he committed the alleged offense. With that, he's still at home, he's still with his family and in his community, and he can see the consequences of his behavior more clearly as opposed to being confined with other people who have war stories and tricks of the trade to pass on. We've been doing this in New Orleans now approaching 1 year with a success rate of about 91%. Okay?
So I was wondering, what specific activities and things do you do with this program?
That's an interesting thing. I guess I could I could put it in a nutshell by saying referencing is one of our key approaches to working with families. I want to first say when a kid is assigned to our program, that court just assigned a family to us. Youth Advocate Program believe in strength-based model, wraparound case management services, basically looking at the support that the community have to offer, linking the family up with that support, and wrapping the supports around that family. Doing the same thing with that family internally inside that circle, we go in and try to pull out the strength in that family and highlight those strengths and have that family understand that they do have great things going on into their little circle, and hopefully they ride off the strength of that circle and do better things. Some of the things we do to help that kid in terms of him giving back to that family and connect that kid with other reference groups. For instance, a kid who's coming out of a neighborhood with high crime and drug dealing and all, get him out of that environment, bring him to a better neighborhood where he can see other things that teenagers do versus hanging on the corner and hanging or thugging or chilling. Let's go to a football game. Let's go bowling. Let's go to a poetry show. Or let's go to the Center of Creative Arts. Expose that kid to other things. We have to believe that if we get the kid connected to other things that's going on, then he's less likely to get tied up into that subculture as being his only paradigm. He sees that paradigms oscillate. They go from round. You can go from one circle to another. Oftentimes, the kids we work with never leave that circle. And our job is to connect them outside that circle so you can see that the world is wider. Okay?
Yeah, so you said that this program has been around for a year. What's the history of it? Like, how did it get started?
Okay, it got started originally. Youth Advocate Program started back in Pennsylvania with an array of juveniles was being detained in an adult correctional facility. Our founder, Tom Jeffers, embarked upon a movement to get those kids out of that adult facility. And in doing so, he did some research finding that incarcerating kids were, in essence, breeding criminals. Their kids wasn't coming out reformed. It was coming out hard because oftentimes they had to deal with an older population who was there, who was exploiting them. So they had to toughen up and mean up and just to cope. And when they came out of those environments, they were no longer kids. They were young, hardened criminals and couldn't change their ways and oftentimes reoffending and recidivating. So Mr. Jeffers and a group of social workers of his time and era embarked upon a movement to close that facility down. And not only did they get the kids out of it, the facility closed down and later became one of the sites that YAP used as a community-based program to do activities in the community where the kids could return to it, but this time for fun project, recreation, social and leisure, and learning opportunities as opposed to incarceration. And the idea took off. They did it several other places, and it took off. And YAP, being considered a national best practice model, is right now embarking on core evaluation to prove statistically that our model is effective. In fact, New Orleans, the Orleans Parish Juvenile Court, contacted Youth Advocate Program because they had read about them and saw the good things they were doing around the country and asked us to come down here and try this detention alternative approach post-Katrina, since our corrective system for the juvenile was obliterated by Hurricane Katrina.
Okay. Yeah, can you say a bit more about that, about how the juvenile correction system fell apart with Katrina?
Okay. Prior to Katrina, statistics showed that we were averaging daily well over 100 kids in the youth study center daily. When the storm came, it physically destroyed the facility to where they only got a bed capacity of 20. It was more like 200. When I say 100 or more, it was more like 200. And any given day, you'll have at least 200 kids in detention. So Judge Bell and others behind him with other beliefs, like they connected with this movement by the Annie C. Casey Foundation called the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative, which was aimed at other ways to address correction with kids. Basically, you can correct a kid and help a kid change his ways at home in his own community versus locking him up. So the Casey Foundation came down and wanted to start a project in the New Orleans area like they'd done in Chicago and up Portland and other places, aimed at simply that. When a kid offends, address the offense in the community as opposed to behind locked doors where crime exists, harm on the kid exists, harm on the staff exists. The cost of keeping a kid in a bed in a detention center is much higher than the cost of providing the service in a community. Casey did research, and you can look at it at the Casey Foundation on the internet. I think you got to type in JDAI.org, and you'll find out about the NMP Casey Foundation. They did research to find that the cost of running a detention center was astronomical versus the penalty you have to pay to keep the kids in the community, and that's how this movement started. So when Casey came down to New Orleans to deal with the way New Orleans was addressing juvenile crime, they found that New Orleans had one of the worst juvenile crime correction divisions in the country, and that we had 200 beds or so in the Youth Study Center, so I guess the system felt compelled to keep those beds filled as opposed to filling the bed because you got an offender. Put anybody in the bed. So kids were being arrested for any and everything. Now, kids are not arrested for any and everything. Kids are arrested for serious offenses or offenses that are detainable. A kid can't be detained. But where we come in at those cases that are not severe, that are not murder and not harm cases where physical harm is done to someone, those all other cases that kid could be safely kept in the community, guaranteed that he'll return to court for his court date, and guaranteed for the most part that he won't reoffend. Okay, and basically that's how we, where the idea came from.
Okay. So what have been some of the biggest challenges running this program?
The biggest challenge in running this program has been dealing with families. The Youth Advocate Program believes that when a kid is assigned to us, they assign a family to us. Remember, we use a strength-based family wraparound model, so as we believe that we can't affect change in a kid's life without affecting change in that family life and that family pattern. So when we go in, we interview the entire family. We do what we call a child family team, where we all get together and we say, hey, listen, what's the problem that you are having? What led up to this kid's arrest? What were his part? What could have been the family part? What do you identify as problems? This is what we identify as your strengths. What do you see as your problem? And how can you as a family and we as an agency come together as equal partners on the team and address the problem situation? And the biggest challenge has been getting families to buy into it. You walk into a family, say, just here come another bureaucrat, here come another state agent, here come another official. And they tend to shut down, and it's just another part of the process that they have to go with. They look at the advocacy program sometimes as an extension of the long arm of the law. The biggest challenge has been letting them see that we are not the long arm of the law. We're the long arm of the community reaching out as a family assistant to help you through this process. Been out by far the deepest challenge, but we worked at it and we've had some successes.
Okay. Yeah, so then, yeah, that brings up the question: what have been like some of the biggest successes?
Okay, that's a good question. Families are needy in New Orleans right now. Post Katrina, they're struggling with the sudden increase in rent costs, sudden increase in insurance and utilities, for instance. And oftentimes, even the working family are struggling just to pay their utility bills. But we've been instrumental with the case, wraparound case management, finding every resource available to that family to get supplement to their utility bill, for instance. And yet, my mother is structured on providing some supplemental support themselves. If we see where we got a person got two-thirds of their utility bill, we might be able to provide that other third from our budget. We've been providing financial assistance for utilities, for clothing, for food. That has been some of the things that we've done that families really help families buy into it, that we wasn't just talking, we were doing. Another thing that helped, that I would consider success, that families are not looking at the court system anymore as a punitive measure. They're looking at it as a helpful system. Now, this kid has gotten in trouble. We're changing that headset from correction to support. This kid has gotten in trouble because he lacks support. You got strength and you're doing this. We want to enhance your strength. We want to help you become better empowered to meet your kid's need. So the juvenile system now is beginning to look seen as a continuum of support. Only punitive where it need be. Okay? A kid with a marijuana charge, that's not a real punitive thing. He might have a drug problem. So we're looking at the substance abuse treatment and getting that kid in treatment and following through and making certain that it happened, as opposed to saying you got to go. Your advocacy program doesn't say you need to go to substance abuse. We say let's go to substance abuse. And then the family demonstrate that they have gotten the value and the will to go through it. You know, then we fade out and ensure that they continue to do it themselves. It becomes a game of system of support versus a center for punishment. Okay.
Yeah, I noticed you've used the term strength-based. I was wondering if you can define what that means.
Strength-based means, it's a strange thing. People oftentimes overlook their strengths. In New Orleans, one strength that I find in a lot of families that we serve, the fact that they are together. You know, you got mom, dad, brother, sister. For to have a two-parent family in New Orleans right now is a big strength. In the era in this city where female head of household is so predominant, when I have a family that got mom and dad, that's a strength just in itself. You got two parents. Parents working, that's a strength. This mother is not dependent on EFDC or SSI. She's working, that's a strength. The will to work is a strength. Strengths are oftentimes obscure or invisible to the family themselves. To them, they're just surviving. Just the will to survive is a strength. We approach strength from the whatever that's working. It's a strength. So anything could be deemed a strength. You got a kid, a blue chipper. He got two or three drug charges. but he's a blue chipper at the local high school. That athletic ability is indeed a strength. That thing might later on carry that whole family to some a better level of life. If that kid can get in college, get a scholarship, and then get a who knows, an NFL or NBA contract. You know, that's a strength that we have to build upon. A lot of things can be considered strength. But I tend to focus on the thing that people oftentimes consider just norms, just strengths. Just the fact that you're still living, you're struggling, you're poor, you're living in a project, or we're living in a project, you're not, you're living in a tent. The fact that you're still trying is a strength. Okay?
Yeah, I was wondering, with this program, do you mainly focus or just entirely focus with people one-on-one, or do you have like group conferences, like a bunch of kids together, or like the whole family together, or something like that?
Oftentimes, the whole family together. Intermittently, we do groups. In fact, we find a need to do groups like with the kids, because in New Orleans, there's such a rash of what we call turf wars. I'm from the 9th ward, I'm from the 7th ward, I'm from the 6th ward, I'm from the 3rd ward, so I don't click with you because you're not from my hood. And it results in murder on the street, believe it or not. Look at the statistics. You see, New Orleans probably is the number one murder center of the country right now. If not, it's second. I guarantee you we're in a close second, in no matter how way you look at it. And a lot of it because kids lack the social interaction skills beyond their realm of familiarity. If you're not from my hood, you don't jive with me, you don't kick with me, so I'm a beef with you. Teaching these kids social interaction skills, greeting skills, character skills, respect and dignity issues, help them get across that barrier. So we found the need to do group activity with the kids just to help defuse that clicking or that turf war mentality. Okay. We do a lot of things with other agencies as well, like you got the Youth Empowerment Project, for instance. They're doing similar work. If I see that they're sponsoring an activity, then I'm going to call Youth Empowerment Program and say, listen, I got some families and some kids that the advocate could bring. Could we join? They're very open, so we join in. We try to find whatever in the community that's on the track of change and referencing, getting the kid exposed to things, exposure we connect with. So, yes, we do a lot of group things. Right now, like in August, we took a group of kids, of 30 or more, to the Louisiana State Penitentiary, whereby it wasn't necessarily a scare straight, but just exposed them to what life could be like when you go to prison. Just recently, for Thanksgiving, we did a give back to the community meal where we invited all the families that we serve and some other court program families to a Thanksgiving dinner. Yeah. So we do a lot of group things, but we're finding it's more of a need to do group things with the particular kids that we serve to help with that turfing issue. Okay?
Yes. Well, I was wondering if you can say some stuff about your background and how you got interested in this line of work.
Okay. I have a master's degree in social work. I'm from Southern University. How I got into this, I think it was my calling. I'd rather play football, but I ended up social working. You know, as a kid who came up, it was just my mom. My dad was always locked up. I ran the streets of the project and hustled and did everything else like these boys doing. That's why I wanted to do this job. When Youth Advocate Program ran this ad, they said, at Rich Youth Program, looking for a program director. I managed several programs with people with disabilities, people with mental illnesses, and some other alternative school program for adjudicated youth. But when they said at-risk youth, then I was an at-risk youth when I was their age, and I did the same thing that some of these kids are doing now, and I knew I had a story to tell, and I joined. Okay.
Then I'm curious, yeah, what was it in your experience that helped you change from being an at-risk youth to...
That's the story I tell. Like, for instance, the guys in the hustle game, the drug-selling game, I remember that I was in that game when I was living in the St. Bernard Project and running between the 7th Ward and the 9th Ward making money. These kids are about getting there. They're going to say, I'm going to get mine, which means they won't be held back. And that's a strength. They are determined not to be held back. Unfortunately, they took the wrong route. our job at Youth Advocate Program to teach them a different route, a legal route, and that's the story I have to tell them. It got me in trouble, and it's only going to end up in trouble if you use that black market route. By the way, since you are so good with selling drugs or hustling, then that means you are assertive, you're aggressive, you can work with numbers. Let's see other professions, other things that you can create careers in that can use those same skills. Okay, I've done it. I like to be an example. And some of the boys are listening. Some of them I still have to connect with. Okay.
Yeah, so the general theme throughout these series of interviews that we're doing is creating a more just and sustainable New Orleans. And I was wondering, what thoughts do you have on how this can best go about?
Well, I think we're on the right track in terms of a more just. And I would have to say about the question sustainable, but I would strongly join upon that boat of a sustainable New Orleans in that the way we had addressed juvenile crime in this city beforehand was to lock a kid up for any and everything that appeared to be wrong. Now we're saying what caused that person to do what you're accusing him of. We're looking at the causes. What was the stimuli? And we're addressing it from a support perspective versus a correction, a punitive perspective. Okay, it violated the law. Why? What are the causes? Now, you did it, proven right or wrong. The proven right or wrong is going to come down in the court process. Let the court deal with that. But you don't have to be spending dollars keeping the kids in detention when you can be at home, still going to school, still with the family, still working on their relationship, still working on the problems that caused them to go out there. Okay, that's the approach that the system is taking, and I think that approach is the better approach. It's been proven that statistics could show from YAP and through the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative that this process works. Okay.
Yeah. So, I'd like to thank you for taking part in this interview, and I definitely appreciate all the work you're doing. And this is signing off.